man, I could go build another company and scale it under a formulaic process that I understood from my first company and do it again, roll some dice and, you know, hit another home, like a one base, two base, whatever kind of exit, and just keep repeating that. And for me, I'm just like, nah, that I feel the call that I'm meant to have received that abundance to then really pour myself into something that is in deep alignment for my soul's calling, which in essence is just supporting people in their own process of really waking up and living from their hearts.
Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. What if you could hang out with high-performing executives, entrepreneurs, and leaders? Ask them about how psychedelics have impacted their self-improvement journeys. Then take an insight or two to guide your own growth. Each week, Alex Atwood takes an in-depth look at how psychedelics can increase fulfillment, solve personal problems affecting your career, and help you gain the success you seek. Alex is an executive and psychedelics coach to high performers, and his goal is to provide strategies to help you reduce conflict, bring awareness, and balance your life through the use of psychedelics. Now, here's Alex.
On today's Alchemist Lounge, we have Tim Say-Koo, an entrepreneur at heart who bootstrapped, scaled, and exited his first software company by 28. Now he's thrown himself head and definitely heart first into the world of psychedelic transformation. He's expanded into psychedelic retreats, coaching, fashion, and possibly a run for the presidency. Of what? Well, who knows? Maybe we'll find out. Welcome to the show, the soon-to-be first Asian-American president of the United States, Mr. Tim Say-Koo. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you. Definitely, definitely, realistically, in my reality, I'm not sure in the current 3D reality, but thank you for that beautiful intro.
Well, absolutely. Well, that intro came with intention, and I've noticed that it's a topic that pops up. I've just noticed it. I mean, I've seen it in your bio, and I've heard you referenced it. So I want to know, like, at what point were you dreaming, or when was that a thing where you decided you want to break that Asian American glass ceiling for the presidency?
It was when I was 6 years young. I was in the back of my mother's car and we were driving, and I mentioned I wanted to be the first Asian American president of the United States at that time. And I think that really just came from, real quickly, and the other was a hotel manager, by the way. So it was very different ends of the spectrum. But yeah, that intention came from a place of noticing just pain and suffering and challenges that either my mom, my single mother, was going through at that time when she raised me and my two older siblings, as well as friends and family friends. And I'm just like, man, there's got to be a way to like fix this or solve this or support this in some way. And so little did I know, it went from politics to like more of the healing modality world, healing arts world that I'm in now.
Yeah. Well, there was always support and service. You know, you would think in the idea of being the president or any politician, right? There's some support and service there. And that was what brought you there. And what's interesting is, and we'll talk more about this later, in a way, you're sort of a hotel manager in a way. You now have resort that you work with, right?
It's a medicine center, actually.
Yeah. Medicine center. We'll talk more about that. Okay, let's not go to the way begin. We kind of went early on to understand, you know, what was happening with Tim at 6 years old. But let's talk a little bit about what may be a pivotal time was when you were, you know, a tech founder and you exited your company at 28 years old. Now, society would say he made it, achieved the goal, you know, like that's it. Like after that, you're going to be on a beach somewhere sipping something and life is just smooth. Now, how did it feel for you?
Great question. I very much thought the same visual of I'm going to kick back on the beach and just chill out. And as soon as the papers were signed for my exit, this was around August of 2018, I noticed my schedule of meetings completely diminish. And it got me worried. I started like getting anxiety, being like, I'm not being productive enough with my time. I'm not doing this. I'm not getting things done. And I was just so programmed into that for the last 7 years that I ran the company. So there was some anxiety for sure, because my identity also was so wrapped up in this company, or, you know, my worth was maybe the busyness that I felt throughout my schedule. And now that was all cleared up, there's so much time to just reflect and be more aware of what's surfacing for myself. So there was some anxiety. There was a lot of excitement, though, in terms of I knew that the sit back and chill out for the rest of my life wasn't me. I knew I had more in me that I wanted to create with. And so I started to travel around the world for about a year and a half and just asked the question, like, what shitty problem do I see around here? And took a notepad and started writing down these ideas and things that I noticed that got me excited to see what would I sort of commit myself to next. And it just so happens that it was something a little bit off to the side that all encompasses everything that I saw as well. In the healing arts world, like I mentioned, we can talk a little bit about that later. But yeah, it definitely took me for a curve that I did not realize that I would commit to that. But beyond that, anxiety, excitement, and a lot of openness of what's to come next. I'm very, very giddy and excited. And I actually had sat with grandmother ayahuasca medicine as a guide to support me in understanding that as well.
Very interesting. Okay. So it sounds, what I heard was that you were now sort of, you had this structure in place and now here you were with, was almost a vacuum happening, right? So you were so used to being somebody in the center of everything and creating, and now you achieve the goal and now what's next? And so that sort of, you know, I don't want to call it strength, but whatever that deep inner core of entrepreneur, startup founder continued to make its way through ways to find support, ways to fix things. You were just looking for something at that time. Yeah,
exactly. Agreed.
I got it. Okay, good. So did you find that challenging or did you find that to be something that was actually an opportunity at the time? Or maybe a little bit of both?
The opportunity was to welcome and really like be open in this, you know, verbiage, surrender to what was to come next. I was very intentional knowing that I wanted to welcome something that I felt full alignment with. And that was a very new feeling because in my last company, I really understood what misalignment felt like. Like that whole journey, 7-year bootstrap startup journey, taught me that if I wanted to create from a place of ego, then that was it. And that's how it felt. And it only lasted so long. So I remembered, I was like, I want to really welcome something that's going to be in full alignment with what I love, what I'm good at, what the world needs, that concept of ikigai. That the opportunity was really just to be like, I'm not going to try to force something that's going to be in alignment. And yeah, just that type A to type B shift was that opportunity in that period of time.
So you were 7 years a bootstrap founder. Yeah. How many years before you found what was in alignment?
It took around, well, funny story. I guess there's two ways to answer that. On a surface level, it was about a year and a half. On a more deep level, it only took 4 months.
Really? Yeah. So in those 4 months, did we happen to meet?
We did happen to meet at the end of that 4 month period. That's correct.
Was that your first experience with ayahuasca at the time?
That was my fifth or sixth experience. I had started working with that medicine prior.
Very interesting. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about One Heart, because where the time that we met was a very pivotal time in my life. Find that very, very special. It was a time that it was a stepping stone along a path that I didn't know what the next stone was, and yet it showed up so perfectly. So I know going into that journey, I didn't know what to expect, but I'd like for you to give me your perspective on what that was like, because, you know, and then we'll talk a little bit about, you know, what's happening now with the organization.
Yeah. I guess just some quick level context, you know, we met at One Heart, which is this 8-week experience. One of the weeks is in Costa Rica together and experiencing plant medicine and different modalities in a group of other, we call it kind of like conscious creators or conscious curious explorers and working with plant medicine. And so, yeah, we met then in, I guess that was January of 2019. And so as you were saying your pivotal moment, I was thinking like, yeah, I was in such a pivotal moment of my life too. And that's what I think makes it so special. for anybody who does listen to this from One Heart, Journey 2, unfortunately or fortunately, is still my most epic, memorable journey out of all of them that I've been through. Because it was so pivotal moment of my life. It was such a pivotal moment in my life.
Yeah.
And for me, what was I going through? So like I said, I had that eagerness to be like, okay, sort of what's next? But I knew I wanted to rest. But in my mind and my body and my heart and my soul and my spirit was like, but yeah, just give me a little taste of what this could be in terms of what's next for me. Anyways, went into that experience, experienced the three ceremonies, experienced the whole container without giving too much away. I just walked away being like, oh, I think I just found that next devotion part of my life. And that was such an epic, epic feeling to come out of that kind of experience. So that was where I was in my life. And that was sort of the big takeaway, which is why it only took 4 months for me to find that. And it took a little bit of time to then, you know, get immersed in the organization and start taking on more things and help out, and really got my groove after about a year and a half ago. So that's where it took about that year and a half to fully get immersed into it. But I found it within that 4 month period.
Mm. Yeah. So we spent a week together amongst what were at first many strangers that suddenly became a family. For anyone listening that's never sat in an ayahuasca ceremony, or any ceremony with intention, it's a very powerful thing. And the participants within that sort of container are going to find connection that they may have not experienced before, at least in an intentional way. So was there a particular moment or a particular time in the journey that you decided and made that choice that this is now what I'm going to be taking on as my next adventure, my next journey to serve my purpose?
Yeah, there was two moments. The first moment, and I'm sure you can acknowledge as well, it's just the pinnacle, like Zen moment in the third daytime ceremony when everybody just clicks and they're like, oh my God, I get it. And you look around the room and you look at people smile and they're just nodding right back at you like a mirror. And in that moment, I'm just like, wow, this in this kind of container with these kinds of facilitators and this kind of like train conduction to make create that experience, this could be a powerful awakening tool, an awakening tool for, in this case, that we were working with other founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, leaders in their own industries. And I speak that language as an ex-founder myself. So that alignment just clicked. And that's where I was like, oh, yes, this feels amazing. And I can see the pudding, the living testament right in front of me of what's actually alchemizing and transforming. That is what made it super sweet. The second part was really a lot of our integration shares in the circles that we had, and to hear the stories and the declarations people were making and the commitments they were ready to embark on. All of those, no physical human being said anything to them. It was them reigniting that connection with themselves through the help of the medicine to receive the answers that they were always inside of, that were always inside of them, but just maybe could not hear or could not see or could not find. And so to hear those declarations and those powerful shifts really planted that seed of like, this works. And not only does this work, this is powerful when you start to create a scaling effect with more folks who can be exposed to this kind of tool.
Mm. So did you immediately think of ways to give back? Because you had gone into that ceremony and you'd gone into that journey already with this intention to give back and support and find structures. I remember on our way in, before I'd even met you, in our WhatsApp chat, you had found, I think it was an orphanage or a school that needed supplies, and you went and did that. And so immediately I said, well, wow, this guy's trying to make an impact right away. We haven't even got there. He's already helping hilarious. Schools and all of that. So I guess the question that I have here is, you came from the tech community, yeah? And like, you came from startup and now you connected with all these startup founders. So did you immediately think, hey, I'm giving back to this tech community, these founders, to be able to offer them something? You know, frankly, a lot of people in the One Heart journey, some of them were exited founders, some of them were startups. They were all there for different reasons and they all didn't necessarily find the answers they were looking for, they found profound answers that were probably above that, right? So how are you giving back to the tech community that you were so successful in, like now that you found this new path that isn't necessarily capitalistic driven, right?
Yeah, I'll just say that my intention with that kind of philanthropic support or beyond that was just how could I contribute to such an epic experience that will probably be a forever memory imprinted in someone's heart that can be a guiding force in how they show up in their lives or how they create their businesses in the future, especially extended founders who probably still have that creative desire to create solutions for the world. And how beautiful would that be when you fuse that feeling they received in that experience with what they create on a daily basis? So that's really where my intention was coming from in terms of how do I just contribute to an epic experience? And philanthropy is part of that. Let me offer myself. And I was in a very fortunate position where after my exit, I had a lot of time because there was no more meetings, right, on my schedule. So that's what I was focused on and sort of still being the sort of guiding North Star for me right now, where I always just try to think about like, what could be added? It's like an orchestra conductor, right? Like what could be added here and over there to really create this memorable, memorable, memorable imprint in someone's heart so they can use that as the North Star for their future. Mm.
Very interesting. And you know, there's so many founders that take, especially when they exit, and especially if it's a decent size exit, a lot of the times they do go to that next step. But most of the times, at least the founders that I work with, the next step is either to set up, you know, some sort of funding mechanism, find other startups to invest in, to be a part of something successful, mainly for, you know, monetary success, right? I'm going to help you to get an exit so we can both share in this wealth and the success, which is fine. There's great energy there. There's nothing wrong with that. But you know, mentoring in and around things that don't necessarily just involve that, do you find that to be more nourishing? Is there something there that you'd like to share with other entrepreneurs, potentially someone else is in your position, right? You know, maybe they're finding much success and still maybe there's something missing. Opine
on that. Juicy question. I really appreciate it. And I feel like one can only ask this question when you really understand being in that position and making very possibly paradigm shifting decisions in one's life. So thank you for bringing that up. I've pondered about this actually. And for me at that time, it became clear that I still value financial abundance and financial freedom for my life, which I was going to find ways to set myself up with the exit money that I had to create that funding mechanism so that all my heart and all my time and all my love can be focused on this kind of work, the healing arts world, right? Which has its stigma around any sort of capitalistic tendencies to come into that as well, because healing should be very pure and authentic. And so, you know, I gave myself the opportunity to create that funding mechanism to then really show up from a volunteer basis with One Heart for about a year to just pour my heart and love into this, to be like, I'm going to come from the most pure place to serve this mission and really understand the ins and outs of this. And I would say, because I made that decision, I realized it humbled the shit out of me. It humbled the shit out of me. And what I mean by that is I find it so nourishing, this work, for sure. And it's so humbling because it's like part of my matrix tendencies or my part of my brain goes like, man, I could go build another company and scale it under a formulaic process that I understood from my first company and do it again, roll some dice and, you know, hit another home, like a one base, two base, whatever kind of exit, and just keep repeating that. And for me, I'm just like, nah, that I feel the call that I'm meant to have received that abundance to then really pour myself into something that is in deep alignment for my soul's calling, which in essence is just supporting people in their own process of really waking up and living from their hearts. So yeah, I wouldn't give up what I do now for the opportunity to go hit some more base runs. And I feel it find it very nourishing and fulfilling to have made that decision that way. Yeah.
Mm. Wow. That's very enlightening. And as we move towards this new way of being, you know, we find that winning or scoring runs, having more decimal points, there's great things in that. There's great energy in that. And there are things that are nourishing in other ways. We'll put it that way.
Sure. I agree with that.
Yeah. So I read in your pre-interview something that is interesting that life is a ceremony, and I couldn't agree with you more. And it's funny because I just heard Steve Parrish, who was a roadie for 30 years with the Grateful Dead. And he said that setting up audio and untangling wires is a ceremony. That's what he said. And he said that so many things being on the road with the dead, so many things in life, so many experiences, so many conversations were ceremony. And this being I'm taping this around the time of the days between, which is the life and death of Jerry Garcia. So I'm listening to a lot of that and I'm understanding that. And so tell me in your perspective, how can mundane things be a ceremony? Seemingly mundane.
Yeah. Well, right now, I guess seemingly mundane is a tree that's just been being there this whole time. Yeah. And then I close my eyes and I ask myself, okay, now I shake it up and be like, this is a ceremony. And I open my eyes and I look at that again. And I'm like, ceremony to me is like ritualistic, sacredness, magic, messages, wisdom. That sounds fun. What if I ask the tree, this seemingly mundane tree in front of me, to teach me about this or that and just see what happens? Like, just be open and see what kind of thought comes through or what kind of message comes through or what kind of guidance comes through. And so even looking at each leaf, noticing the different colors, being like, wow, all the spectrum of colors that brings so much beauty to this world. Like, you can go down so many different routes, right? And that's what I find so fun with life as a ceremony, that kind of perspective, because now all the mundane things can be a rabbit hole of wealth, information, and wisdom for one's own life, for example, here. Mm.
Yeah, that's true. When you think about the branches of a tree and you think about the roots of a tree and you think about all the colors and all the seasons that a tree goes through, and you think about how that's a microcosm of life and a microcosm of the universe and a microcosm of the galaxy. It's so true. There's it's so deep and it's so nourishing. What Steve had said was that as he untangles the wires and as he plugs things in and he sees things like come to fruition and turn into sound, and the game that's there when one wire is mixed in with three other wires and suddenly has to figure out, you know, which is the lead and which is the red and all of that. And it's just such a game, and life is just so much fun. And so that really resonated with me when I saw that. And I said, you know, there's a reason why, you know, we get to talk about life and see life in a different way and be aware of things. And much of that does come from the work around plant medicine and around awareness. So I want to jump in that real quick, because a lot of, you know, I've now taken a big shift in my life's purpose, but what should business leaders know about psychedelics? Because things are changing at a rapid fire pace right now in the world. And I've written some articles. I had an interview 2 weeks ago with a journal that was interested in me as an active CEO that discusses in a public forum psychedelics. Am I concerned about how colleagues will look at that? And is the destigmatization of psychedelics happening quickly enough to be able to like really resonate with existing business leaders? So what's your advice to business leaders about psychedelics? And as a business leader, you think about your employees, you think about yourself, you think about society, you think about how your business reflects out there. I'd love to hear your ideas on that and your perspective.
Yeah, there's a couple answers that come up. The first one, in terms of just, I don't know, so much of advice, but just more of a, I always say, I've learned from my teacher that all we can do is plant seeds. So think of this as like a seed to just plant in their hearts, is the power of reverence with these medicines. So when I think about what you just shared, I think about the Onion article that came out 5-6 years ago of how CEOs are going down to South America to drink ayahuasca to find the next unicorn billion-dollar idea. And I think that's hilarious from an audience perspective and satirical perspective. And there's totally some truth to that. And that's what I mean by saying, I mean, sure, there's some sensational headlines, and I'm sure there are intentions to possibly use these psychedelics as, quote, shortcuts to expedite certain things in our life. I would revert that perspective to more of a perspective of, because you're going to go deep into your own shadows and wounds and inner world and do the work. That's why, and this medicine will expose all that in a very accelerated way, that the result is going to be the accelerated results that you see in your life, whether it's how you approach your business, how you approach relationships, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of the first part there. The second thing I would just say around this is, especially as it relates to founders or other entrepreneurs who experience this medicine and have a community to serve and show up for, the integration piece as it relates to exuding and being and exemplifying the wisdom that you received or ones received from their ceremonies is of utmost importance. Because we have the opportunity to be in the spotlight, then there's that set of responsibility. And part of the responsibility of these kinds of experiences, the integration period, where in this case, more specifically, how do we start to embody and make new agreements with ourselves that allow us to be the wisdom that we received based on the intentions that we came in with these ceremonies or these usage of psychedelics? So those are kind of the two key things that come up in terms of just like the reverence and the responsibility of deep integration and embodying and exemplifying the wisdom that one receives in these ceremonies.
Mm, very good. And do you feel that these ceremonies could lead to an expanded business, could lead to a new culture for a company, could lead to things happening that perhaps business leaders haven't seen in their organization?
Yeah. I wrote about this actually on a white paper a couple years ago, where I kind of just envisioned what a world with more business leaders working with plant medicine and elevating their own consciousness and self-awareness, and then applying that into their day-to-day work. And a couple things that really stood out. It wasn't just me who wrote it. I co-wrote it with my co-founder and a few others, which was really fun to create, is competition being an illusion. Mm-hmm. And it's such a paradigm shattering concept for so many entrepreneurs business leaders. And I get it. It's ingrained in our textbooks of what's the competitive model, you know, who are your competitors, how you're going to crush them and this and that, right? So I love this new paradigm perspective of competition is just an illusion. And when you sit with that and you just marinate with that, you just chew on that, you just contemplate on that, you're like, oh, whoa. Okay.
I get it.
Okay. Yeah. And for me, it just really started motivating me in how I approach others who have a very similar mission as I do and are maybe approaching it just a little differently than I am, but all in all is still contributing to the greater good of what this work is meant to be doing. Hmm. So that's really shifted my own paradigm for that. And the second one, which I get very sort of excited about, is how do we really consider anything beyond just our own ego and desires for what we want to create, and really the planet, the communities, and just even the people you serve? Just really start to think beyond ourselves. Because for me, it hits home because I started my company out of ego. I needed to compensate for my lack of self-worth. And so a lot of the company building was me, and for me, and to soothe this, but maybe not be fully aware. And so, yeah, it was just money, profit, let's grow, let's scale, let's do that. But when one chooses to see beyond that, or allows themselves to see beyond that, then the game changes. And it's so much more complex, but also very fascinating to observe and contribute and be a part of.
Mm. Well said, brother. Well said. Well, what's next for Tim Sekou? Will there be a presidential run in 2020?
In my reality again. Now, what I'm most excited about nowadays in life, actually, is recently moved into a medicine center here in Costa Rica. It's called Reunion. And they focus mainly on ayahuasca and psilocybin. And that is so special for my heart because 4 years ago, in my second ayahuasca ceremony ever, I was ready to sell my company. And that was 6 months before I was ready to sign the papers. And I asked the medicine, please show me what's next. How can I best manifest my purpose of service? And after 3 hours being in prayer's pose with my forehead on the ground, this sort of like veil unlifted, and I was like falling into a movie. And in this movie, I saw myself walking on top of mountains with an ocean in the background and with some other people. And when asked, what is this all about? What am I here for? I received the message that I was to take everything that I felt misaligned with in my business, but knew all the skill sets, and apply it to a campus that of alternative healing modality. And these were people that were facilitators from around the world and people in the Western world who couldn't find that sort of healing in their traditional modality. And this space, these facilitators, these modalities we share are a great, maybe even their last hope to resolve what they're going through. And you're going to contribute to that kind of environment. And so that's been about 4 years ago. And 4 months ago, 5 months ago, I was invited to come move into to this space called Reunion, which was purchased and rebuilt or remodeled by a One Heart alumni. So of course, it would come through One Heart, which made it even more full circle and savory and sweet to receive it that way.
Life is so divine. Things work out so perfectly.
Absolutely.
And who knows what the next step is, but whatever it is, we're going to take it with an open heart and one heart. Beautiful, brother. Well, thank you so much for your time today. If anyone's interested in learning more about Tim, please click the link above. There's so much more to talk about. He's also in the fashion business now. He's also a very musical man, and we're going to have a lot more to talk with Tim about, and we'll be seeing him at Burning Man very soon. Great to see you, brother. Thank you for joining the Alchemist Lounge. So much alchemy in this conversation, and I look forward to having more.
Thank you, Alex. Much appreciated.
Thanks for listening in to the Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at the Alchemist Lounge.